Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Sam. Hannah and I have been coming here for almost a year now. Rob asked me to do this earlier in the week, and so I'm probably more comfortable really at Bunnings than I am talking about my faith up here. So it's a bit of a surprise, but here we are. I did find that between my trips to Bunnings, and I've had a few more than I wanted actually in the last few days, a few machinery breakdowns, it was a great chance to just sort of stop and think properly about what the communion means to me. Because normally it's something that you just do every week, and I definitely don't spend hours thinking about it. And really, for me, it boiled down to two main things. Firstly, I really love that it unites us, and at this church, everyone can partake in it. And that's really special to me. I find it frustrating when denominations or sort of non-core beliefs separate us. And I find it just fantastic to have like the sort of culmination of the service where you can put that aside and you say, yes, we all believe in this one most important part of our faith. The second part is just for me, and I like that there's one time in the week where I can stop and take stock of how that week's gone, whether my behaviour and what I focused on that week represents what I actually believe in. Because it's easy to sort of drift off and lose focus. Particularly if there's a time that's busy for work, and then also I've got a project going on at home, which is actually supposed to be fun, it's super easy to put all my effort in that and just get laser focused on that. But then I stop thinking about my friends and my family or the balance in my own life, spending enough time for me and then my relationship with God. So it's great to have that one moment in the week where I can think about whether that has gone right in the last week, and there's always something to work on. But then you can go into the next week with like a renewed focus on whatever it is that's gone not quite right in the previous week. So while there's slight differences in what communion means for us and what we focus on there, I'm looking forward to sharing communion and spending that time with God with you later today. And just knowing that God is there and that He's there for all of us. Thanks, Josh.
New series. I get to kick it off today, and a bit of an overview today. It is, can you believe Jesus has like a billion followers? After such a small start, you know, He's not done too bad. I remember one of the young guys who used to come to West City, no longer comes here, said he did a Bible study with an atheist friend of his. And they went through the Gospels. And one of the things his mate said at the end is he said, I don't want to follow Jesus, but you can't fault him. You can't fault him. He wasn't after money or power in the sense that we see power today. He wasn't a womanizer. You know, he was the real deal. And C.S. Lewis said, Jesus kind of just being a good man. He was either a liar. He was either insane because he was like, follow me, or he was telling the truth. And so we're going to do a series about this beautiful Yeshua and some of the lessons we're going to learn around how he led. And so today's a bit of an overview. I'm going to talk from John 13. We're going to talk about the towel and bowl as a metaphor of leadership. And then each week following, we're going to look at specifics. And I'll give you a little sneak peek at the end. All right? So let me just start by reading our passage for today. And I'll pull it up here on the screen so you can read along. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. And now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. To which I say, have you seen my feet, Lord?" He says, "I have set to you an example that you should do as I have done for you." Let me repeat that. "I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." And everyone said, "Hip hip." We don't say amen here at West City. We're real. We're the real deal. Last week, I told you a little bit about some of the friends I've made in different places around the place. And forgive me, but I just want to carry that on a bit today, because this was the best illustration I thought I could find. About 6 months ago at the gym, I met this young guy from Spain, Yanni. And Yanni and his partner, Maddie, and their little one, we've had breakfast together. And he's a beautiful young guy. He's a type of young guy who, I think he's 30, so I say young, but, you know, he's the type of guy who, he's told me his past, he was just like aimlessly wandering, and yet he's discovered that he wants to better himself and kind of like learn. And the way he's done that is as he's been in Perth, he's sought out people that he can find who he looks at their lives and they can maybe mentor him from a distance or with catching up with them, mentor him around business and mentor him around being a father and a husband and a dad. And mentor in regards to his spirituality. Yanni isn't a follower of Jesus. He kind of believes in a higher power. And somehow we got talking. And eventually, I've been saying I'm a counselor, but I eventually realized it's not good to lie. So I let him know, you know, kind of a pastor, what's that? And then kind of priest. Okay, so we've been chatting and we sat at Dome the other day. He's had to fly back. His dad passed away, and he said it was really tough. And he'd come back, and we're catching up. And he asked me this question. He said, "What's a big dream in life you have? What's your big life dream?" And I was like, "Oh." And the reason I went, "Oh," is because, not that I don't know it. To me, it actually, you know, in my head, I was thinking maybe he was, you know, thinking I was going to say, "You know, I'm going to, you know, lead a massive Fortune 500 organization or something." I don't know. But I said, "You know what, Yanni?" And I told him the answer. And he was like, oh, okay. And then I talked to him yesterday on the phone. We just had a chat. He called me. I missed the call. Called back. We just started chatting. And he said, Phil. This is his Spanish accent. Phil. You know what? I talked to my other mentors. He sounds a bit German now. I talked to my other mentors. And I asked them the same question. What is your big life dream? What do you want? And he said, you know, from the business to, he said, they all had the same answer as you. And he said, in a nutshell, it's a life, live well, serving others. That's what every single one of them said. They want to live a life where they can enrich other people's lives. And he said, how fascinating. And I was like, yeah, it is. And then he was like, it was so bizarre. He was like, you know, it's just like Jesus, isn't it? In John 13, where Jesus washed the apostles. Is that how you say it? Apostles. I was like, apostles. You know, get your English right, Yanni. Come on. The apostles' feet. The idea that you would lower yourself on behalf of someone else to help and serve them. And he was like, that's why Jesus was a great leader. And I was like, oh, I was getting all excited, you know, because like, I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm speaking on this on Sunday. He's like, anyway, we chatted. He's going to come to church. He's going to come. I was like, you'll love these people. You'll love them. So you better be on your best behavior that Sunday. I'm bringing my mate, all right? So no wackiness, all right? And it got me thinking, right? How has servant leadership become so mainstream? Basically, Jesus has made it cool. Jesus has actually, by doing something here, in the psyche of like what is ethically good in our society, even people who don't know him would say, you know what? Living a life in service of others is really what fills me up. I mean, how profound and how beautiful. And I say that I think this comes from Jesus because I'm going to read you a little quote in a minute from a historian who's done a bit of work on this. But before I do, think about this thing. We just read that. Most of you go, oh, I do. I read this passage and I go, how lovely. It's beautiful. Do you know that passage is so shocking? So shocking. Like, but 2,000 years of Christianity has kind of like inoculated us from the shock of it. When we say Jesus was a revolutionary leader, and when we talk about the towel and bowl, we are talking about something that was absolutely profound. Now, I want to get Josh Potter back up again, because you say to me, really, is the idea of servant stuff, leadership stuff, you know, is it prevalent? Well, here's a God botherer here, and he told me a little story, and I want him to tell it, because I just think this is actually really interesting to see what happened in your workplace, right? So, over to you.
So, simple context for those that don't know, I'm a manager where I work, so I'm an operations manager, which is just a fancy way of saying we've got like a warehouse in Wangara that's got like 10 vehicles and about 25 sort of installs that are managed on day to day with all the jobs and everything else. So obviously part of that is a whole bunch of sort of business management and all that sort of thing, and leadership and raising up all the leaders in the company. Obviously with a team that big, I even talked to because I'm lucky enough to have my boss, the one that started the company, is a Christian, and his dad and his brother also work for us as well, which is awesome. So I've got sort of a couple of guys around the office all the time that are Christian sort of influences. And I always sort of say, well, Jesus had like three main sort of people around him, like his core three, and then he had his 12, and then there was sort of 72 and all the rest of the other things that you can go around. So I grabbed three guys that I wanted to sort of focus on that were basically the ones that were going to be promoted. This was November last year, so it wasn't even that sort of long ago. But obviously we're just in a point in the company where it was time to promote these guys. So basically the way that I did it, because it's the way that I was sort of shown in all my years being at the company, is I sort of got him in the room. I had a bowl and a cloth there. And I had just the quote on a whiteboard that just said, the greatest among you will be the servant, which isn't from this passage in particular, but from Luke. And then I just told them to sort of get their shoes off. Well, one guy is sort of an Aussie guy. He's been with me for a few years. He had no context whatsoever for foot washing, like at all. He didn't even have a clue what it was. One guy was from Bhutan, so he's very Buddhist background, and they have sort of a similar process or similar sort of practice in their culture. That, so he knew roughly sort of what it was going to be about. And then the other guy was a South African guy who's been in sort of Australia for like a decade now, and he's got Christian parents as well, so he sort of roughly knew what was going on as well. But yeah, it was basically just like my way of saying to the boys that they're going to be promoted. It was good in Luke's passage, the one that I read, because it sort of says like, you know that the Gentiles lorded over them, and it was sort of this conversation of, they all had an expectation of how business works and how management works. And obviously the assumption and idea is you sort of, if you're getting promoted, you start to earn a bit more and you probably don't have to do as many hours and you get to tell more people sort of what to do and that sort of thing. And I just sort of said to him, like, it is not like that at all around here. And I just said, this is sort of how we do things. And then with with their shoes off already, I washed all their feet individually. And I just said, you guys are now sort of promoted officially, like I'll do HR, can do the paperwork later sort of thing. But that was sort of the marking point to just say, like, I'm leaving you boys in your roles to do what you got to do, but this is the way that you sort of do it and go about doing it. So that was just, yeah, the practical way that I tried to get that same message across to them. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. It's one of those things, isn't it? Like, it's not something, even in church we do heaps. We do it when people are being baptized, and that's the first act because it's how we go into the world, right? But I was like, that's so brave in one sense, but also it is a beautiful metaphor to say, hey, if you want to be great, Jesus never said you can't be great. He just said greatness looks like service, laying down your life, emptying yourself for others. And it's true. Today, it still is, like you said, there still is a bit of the Lord of the manor mentality. But it was even more so in Jesus' day. It's fascinating to reflect on how two acts, washing feet and what washing feet pointed to, the crucifixion, could have such a profound impact on the world. It can be easy for us to miss the cultural seismic shift that was at play in what Jesus did here. Because when Jesus did these things, serving those of a lower position or status was not mainstream thought. In fact, the opposite was the case. In Jesus' time, the concept of philotimia, the love of honor, held immense significant. People's lives revolved around seeking honor and shame. By the way, I'm reading this because this is a little synopsis of the historical work done by John Dickerson, who is a senior fellow, research fellow of the Department of Ancient History at Macquarie University. And he's written a little book about Jesus-style leadership called Humilitas. Has anyone read this book? No one. It is phenomenal. And in it, it's not really a book about Christian theology. It's a book about the historical fact that Jesus changed by these two acts what humility meant. That's how profound a leader he was. So who would like to read this? Who would like to... Joe, I saw your hand first. Can I do what they do in mega churches and throw it out? I wish I had one of those air cannons and a fire t-shirts. Thank you so much, Nikki. So this is my little synopsis of that, but the research is in this, right? But let me read on. The idea of philotimia, the love of honor, held immense significance. People's lives revolved around seeking honor and avoiding shame. Honor was the pinnacle of virtue, surpassing even wealth and possessions. In Mediterranean cultures of that era, being honored demonstrated one's merit, while shame implied worthlessness. Being honored by those of lower status was not only acceptable, but expected. And boasting about one's achievements was seen as virtuous. Ha! That's amazing, isn't it? People had statues, wrote big, long things of all the achievements they've done. And it was like, good on you. That's actually so virtuous. Well done. Conversely, serving someone of equal or lesser status was considered shameful. While people humbled themselves before gods and kings out of fear, it was unheard of to take subservient position to an equal or lesser peer. So when Jesus on that day took on the role of a servant by wrapping a cloth around himself, grabbing a bowl of water, and washing his disciples' feet, he shattered their understanding of greatness and honor, blew them out of the water. He'd already hinted to it and said things like, you see how they lord it over. When he said they lord it over, we think of like a boss who gets us to do the work and doesn't do the work. Jesus had, you know, it was at level 10 in Jesus' day, lording over. John 30's impact might have been diluted over 2,000 years of Christian reflection, but what Jesus did initiated a leadership revolution in how strength and humility were perceived. Today, we view humility as virtuous, wherein in his time it was considered a sign of weakness and worthlessness, something to be avoided at all costs. This transformation in the concept of humility remains a testament to the enduring influence of these two remarkable acts by Jesus and what it speaks to us about what it means to truly lead well. And so today what I want to do is unpack this idea of the metaphor of the towel and bowl and chat through for a few minutes about what it could look like for us, because for many of us, we can't rock up at work with a towel and bowl of water and just start, you know, washing people's feet. But when Jesus did it, what was he saying? How could the towel and bowl, how can we unpack it today maybe and look at that? So I want to take these verses and just look at a few things. The very first verse says, Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. And then it says this beautiful statement right at the beginning of John 13. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Could leadership, towel and bowl way, could it look like acts of service motivated by love for people? The reason I laugh is because I think I'm always talking about love, right? I just feel like you're all like, yeah, all right, love, right? Yeah, love people. But I actually think this is really important when it comes to lowering yourself on behalf of someone else to help them, ennoble them, lift them up, strengthen them. Because there are a lot of motivators for doing things, isn't there? One of them is duty. We could read a passage like this and think, I should do this as a follower of Jesus. But how many people know duty is a poor cousin to love? Amen? We, on Wednesday nights, do nonviolent communication. I'm learning so much about how to nonviolently communicate with you. It's so good. And Caroline. And one of the things in nonviolent communication is this idea of, like, demand. You know, you get into an argument and you're like, you never spend enough time with me, Caroline. You're always marking papers. It's not fair. Now, the real core thing is I miss her and I'm lonely and I want to be with her. But what do I do instead? I demand, spend more time with me. How many know when you're a spouse and something is demanded of you, it takes all the fun out of doing it, right? Totally, duty. Like, who wants to do duty? It is so tiring. Can anyone say amen? And so if we are to leave the Jesus way, right, it can't come from that place of duty, because we'll get exhausted. And maybe you read a passage like this and we talk about similar leadership and you say, I'm exhausted just even reading this. Maybe it's coming from a place of duty. Throw it away. The other thing is, the other motivators I just put down is, we all know the for show motivator, you know. We all seen the YouTube influencers who go and give a homeless person money for clout. And in one sense, I think, well, at least they got some more money. You know, there's a net positive there. But on another, it's kind of icky, isn't it? It's like the camera is on me. Hi, mate, how you doing? Here's $100. And something in us goes, ugh, what a terrible motivator. You see, because I think the motivation there isn't love, it's show, right? Problem with that is, if we have that as a motivation, we only do it when people are looking. And Jesus said, servant leadership isn't when people are looking, it's a lifestyle which should be lived and embedded deeply in all that we do. I so want to talk. I've seen it over and over again. I've seen it in my own life. You know, I've seen me going, oh, everyone's looking. Would you like a hand with the dishes? You know, hello, everyone. Look how servant leadership I am. And then the person says yes, and inside I'm like, oh. For sure. Some people, the motivation, which wasn't Jesus' motivation, but is low self-esteem or low worth. You see, people who don't know the worth, you might do it so that worth is reflected back on you and you feel worthy because you've done something that has given a positive feedback. Thank you. You're not a waste of space. You're actually great. And you get that warm, fuzzy feeling. And that's okay. To reflect back thankfulness to one is no problem. But don't let it be the motivator to say, well, I'm lesser, so in order to be worth something in our community, I need to serve and then I'm accepted. That's not a great motivator, because often if the reflection isn't coming back, it's so hard to keep serving. We feel like we're being used and we feel like there's a sense of like, I don't get seen here. Jesus, it says here, he loved them. We've got to love them to the end. What a liberating thing, hey. I do this because I love people. No? Oh, that was pretty, yeah. You're like, yeah, we got it, move on. Okay. Love listens and watches, so as you see what's needed and then take action to help, it's sustainable. All right. My mate that I met at the pub, Lewis, who was a bikie or an ex-bikie, he again didn't know I was speaking on this subject this week, and he sent me this out of the blue. It says, never follow a leader who is more in love with power than people. I was like, Lewis, what the heck? I'm having all these little God moments with all these like crazy, amazing, pagan people who are beautiful, and I love them. The towel and bowl, Jesus doing the act of wrapping the towel and washing disciples' feet. Could it look like this? It looks like the gift of your strength given to those who need it the most. It says Jesus knew that the Father put all things under his power and that he came from God and was returning to God. Josh is leading these guys, but he's like, my strength is like here for you guys. I want to help you. I want to problem solve with you. And one of the great things about having a microphone each Sunday is I get to like talk about people I love and that we all love, right? I get to like rave about people. Now, she's going to kill me for this. She's going to kill me. But I just want to just, I think Mel Longhurst is an amazing servant leader, and she exemplifies this over and over. Now, I didn't tell her I was going to say her because she would have been like, I will kill you. You're not allowed to say anything. She's literally mortified and she's going to run out the room any minute. But I love to be able to just celebrate what I think I see and I learn from her. She exemplifies a servant leader. She walks alongside people and uses her strength, insight, and knowledge to make the lives of those she walks alongside better. She loves people and so helps us in practical ways, doesn't she? She's so willing to jump on a roster to problem solve, to get alongside, to support the stuff we can't do. She does it because she loves us. She really does. We have camp coming up. We have like 900 people coming. No, I think it's about 90, right? We keep cramming more in. And usually on camp, the person who does all our beautiful hospitality and food is John Sear, another person who loves on us in so many practical ways. Now, this year, John's not coming. And we all said, well, don't boo him. What? Oh, man, John. That backfired. Good job I'm talking about servant leadership here and encouraging one another. Anyway, John's not coming, and so as a result, 2-minute noodles for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. No, so this is Mel's solution to John not coming. She says to me, she informed me, we are going to do all the catering. I was like, we? Who's we? You and I, Phil, we're doing it. For those who don't know, Mel is co-leading this church with me here. She could have been like, right, delegation time. Who is the lowest of the low? Who we can manipulate into doing this? She's like, we're going to do it. And so she's been cooking up truckloads of spaghetti bol. I have to do buttered chicken, so you may or may not want to eat it. Just saying. But I know her motivation is this. I'll tell you, I know it. It's like she wants you to have the best camp experience you can possibly have. She wants you to be relaxed. She wants you to enjoy yourself. She wants your cup to be full and running over. And that, to me, is a classic example of someone who says, the towel and bowl to me is giving my gift of strength to those who need it. Now, you might be sat here and say, I don't think I need it. Mel doesn't care because she thinks you need it. And you know what? Mel's right. You do need it. You need to be loved on. You need to be cherished, and you need to be fed. That's why John every year has done that to us. And by the way, we've got all the same stuff as last year. So get ready. She's going to hate this, but I wondered whether we could actually thank Mel. Mel, we love you. Looks like your strength to those who need it the most. Ah, look, I'll just say it. We've got the referendum coming up, The Voice, right? Maybe we need to just stand in solidarity with those who need a voice. Maybe. Now, I don't know what you're going to vote on. And it's your choice. I asked Josh Peppel because I thought, Josh works in an indigenous stuff. He's grown up with indigenous crew. And I was like, we went up hunting a few weeks ago. And I was like, oh, great, I've got 2 hours for him to download his wisdom, because I hadn't really followed it, and I wasn't really sure of, like, it seemed pretty straightforward. Give a place at a table, like, you know. So I said, Josh, what's your view on The Voice? He said, I don't know. He goes, like, I haven't given it much thought yet. I was like, oh, great. Thanks, bro. But one thing he did say is surely it can't be harmful to have our indigenous brothers and sisters speaking and hearing from them. Anyway, it's gone quiet. All good. The third thing, maybe the towel and bowl is a metaphor that we could unpack, is it looks like a willingness to move towards people in all their glorious mess. Now, Josh, I don't know what their feet look like of those boys, but, you know, work boots and, yeah, man, there would be some serious cheese kind of smells happening, I'm sure, and, you know, toe jam. And the whole picture of foot washing, it was the servant, the lowliest of the lowliest would do this, and it was, the dirty, dusty feet, and Jesus does it. And it, to me, is a picture of servant leadership of Jesus moving towards mess, but glorious mess, right? I met Dorothy and her dog Sooty on my morning walks. Dorothy is 90 years old. Sooty is 13. Dorothy told me Sooty has saved her life because he is her sole companion since her husband died 2 years ago after falling over and passing away. And on my morning walk, when I see Dorothy and Sooty, sometimes I have Humphrey with me, my daughter's dog. I have Humphrey. We walk together for a little bit. She walks up the path and then back down the gravel path amongst the bushes, which I really am worried about. I'm like, don't fall over down there. No one will see you. Sometimes I just walk that way just to check, you know. But we walk together, albeit very slowly, we walk together and we chat. And she's told me about her 5 kids. She told me about the last 2 years, how she's been so lonely, but how Sooty has been her beautiful companion. She's like, I hope I die before Sooty does. I don't have the heart to tell her, what would Sooty do? He'd be in the house on his own. But anyway, you know, but she loves him so much. She's estranged from a few of her kids, and some of them live close, and she loves them. We actually have a laugh together about, she was like, I'm so forgetful. And we laugh about her forgetfulness. Each time I see her, we reintroduce our names to one another. It's awesome. It's like 50 first dates. I'm actually thinking of making a little video saying, this is Phil, this is, you know. And we kind of laugh about it. We chat. I mean, I'm terrible with names anyway. But I would never have known Dorothy or been enriched by her if I hadn't slowed down and just got close. And you could say Dorothy is a glorious, messy person. She's had bad stuff happen. She's had tragedy. She's got ongoing concerns and beautiful moments in her life and kids who are estranged from her and just getting close. And I think this is the ministry of Jesus. What he did is he washed feet. He was really wrapping up what he'd done all the previous ministry life. And what had he done? He just slowed down, walked towards the one, and let them know the good news that God actually loves them and he wants them to come home. He's got a place at the table for him. He went after the one sheep. I think that's a picture of Jesus' leadership style. I think it's a picture of what can happen if we are willing to just move towards mess. And that's what foot washing kind of tells me. In closing, I want to read to you just the final thing towards the end. He says, I have set you an example. Listen to the words of Jesus, that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Jesus set an example of what it means to give of ourselves for the good of others. I guess the question for me is, like, as we go into this series, but as we live our lives, would it be possible to hear his invitation this morning? Our Lord, our Savior, our leader. Come on, do what I've been doing. Do what I do. If you will, I want to remind you of the good news of what Jesus said. Listen to that end bit. You will be blessed if you do them. To which I would add, forgive me, Lord, for adding to your word, but I would add, and so will a whole bunch of people around you. Sometimes, you know, when you raise kids, you catch them doing stuff and you want to reward them for it. You know, that's a good style of parenting, isn't it? Like reinforcing good stuff. I'm not saying you're kids or anything, and I'm not saying I'm your parent, but today I want to say I think this is already bubbling away in so many of us as a community. And today's message isn't like, you're not doing, you should do. It's me going, let's keep doing the towel and bowl thing. Let's keep following Jesus-style leadership, yeah? Let's keep modeling it and living it. And you know what? Talk about it very little and just live it, because people see it, feel it, and are blessed by it. The beautiful thing is laying down our lives for others, like Jesus did, blesses us somehow, as well as those around us. Figure that out. Flipping awesome. So next 5 weeks, we've got like a masterclass on Jesus leadership. I actually think it shouldn't be missed. Let me give you a sneak preview of the topics. Attentiveness. Solidarity is 1 week. Asking great questions, and Brian Harris is going to be coming in to speak on that one. Some of you are like, who's Brian Harris? It's going to be good. A new definition of success and solitude. So these are all things that we'll be looking in.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression, go out and proclaim anew the old, old story, go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us. His name is Jesus.